Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, where myself, Catherine Whittaker, is in Paris and joined by The Telegraph's tennis correspondent, Simon Briggs. Simon, you've been double dipping today. You've not only been writing for The Telegraph, you've also been commentating for the BBC on the biggest story in town.
Yeah, that was an amazing match and an even better press conference. Serena Williams, I've never seen her look so happy as she did in the interview room afterwards, which was lovely, really.
Well, what do you make of that? So the facts are that she won through in straight sets against Kristina Pliskova, although there's a lot more to it than those raw facts. And in the intervening period between the match and the press conference, I heard a lot of people saying, oh, I'm not sure how pleased she'll be with that. She certainly seemed to be a long way off her best. And then she comes into the press conference completely beaming and more giving of her time than I think we've seen of Serena in many years, probably.
Yeah, she was glowing with bonhomie. I mean, I don't think Serena's been a bad person to interview over the years at all. As I've said on the Tennis Podcast many times, Venus is terrible. Serena has been interesting, sometimes grumpy, sometimes quite funny, many different moods. She often talks about herself as having different personalities and gives them different names. But I haven't seen that one before. This is the post-maternity personality, and it's extremely upbeat, smiley, and full of joy.
Do you think that had anything to do with the performance, or do you think she would have been that way regardless of the performance?
No, I think she wanted to win. I mean, I think the win was what she was after, hook or by crook, and it wasn't a great performance by any means. But look, I mean, who's going to come back after the story of her last 50 months or whatever it is now and play cracking tennis on their first day? You just can't do that. I mean, not even a superhuman dressed in a superhero cat suit can do that.
We'll come on to that, Simon. We'll come on to that. Don't worry. Well, do you get the impression that now she's got that win under her belt, she can kick on from here? Or do you think she's so far from her best on the basis of today's performance that perhaps winning or reaching the latter stages is out of her grasp?
I don't see her doing well here. I don't see her beating Barty, to be honest. I mean, I was watching Pliskova. Pliskova doesn't seem to play with much nous to me. She's got some weapons, but if you look at the number of times she's blaring the ball, going for 100% power when there's massive slices of court that are open. If you look at the way that the things that made Williams uncomfortable today were moving to the short balls, were dealing with the awkward shots, the ones that aren't regulation, the improvisations, the drop shots, they were horrible. You know, I mean, the actual ground strokes were solid. She was well rehearsed. She didn't move great, but she moved okay. She got to the backhand corner and did her sort of split Djokovic-type retrieval shots. That was solid. But yeah, if you move her around and give her different propositions, I think that's what Barty's good at.
I mean, you couldn't imagine a more different opponent for Serena in the second round to the first. Ash Barty and Kristina Pliskova, polar opposites in tennis terms.
Exactly, and so you're going from somebody with some natural gifts but a pretty low tennis IQ, I think, Kristina, but that was my impression of that match today, to a really creative, thoughtful and versatile player, and that's why I think Serena's likely to get exposed in the next round.
Do you think that will be termed an upset?
Well, we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves. I could be completely wrong, as you know.
If it were to happen, though, on the basis of what's happened today, given the reaction that you've seen, the atmosphere around the place, of the people, the journalists, etc., having watched Serena's performance, would her losing to Barty in the next round be a shock?
I don't know. It's a little bit almost like Kvitova, isn't it? Coming back last year, it's all about the first match. I mean, there are people here who think, oh, it's a big deal in terms of actually Serena being a contender. But I've never seen that. You know, when she was pulling out of Madrid and Rome, you can't come into the French on the back of no clay court matches and win it. I just don't see it. And it's more a question of building for the grass where she'll be at her best. I think the interesting thing is, will she go in for Eastbourne?
And will she?
Well, if I was her, I would. I mean, I remember her doing that when she came back from the mysterious foot injury. What was that, about 8 years ago? And it was wonderful. I mean, a little bit like Novak last year, a big fish in a small town. And he loved it as well, and he won the tournament. He didn't win Wimbledon, obviously.
Is that Serena Williams dealt with just before we move on? Well, yes, I know. Well, as you know, I just need to preface this because I have sort of set out my store on many a previous podcast as being somebody that doesn't like to talk about tennis outfits. But that is not because I don't like outfits or clothes or it doesn't interest me. It's because of the misogyny with which those conversations are laced. So what I suggest we do here is cover Kyle Edmund's outfit and Ooh. Serena Williams' outfit no, in the same conversation, Simon. Are you on board with that?
Well, you've got a get off scot-free clause about the Serena Williams outfit because she raised it as a technical piece of equipment. Quite seriously, straight.
It looked pretty hot and sweaty to me. That was my first reaction.
No.
Was you look like you're going to be sweating buckets in that.
Yeah, but seriously and straight faced, she says, I'm wearing a lot of pants at the moment because of my blood clots.
Oh, so it's kind of like compression tights.
Yeah. And somebody said to me, quite seriously, they suggested to me, has she got a knee problem? Because they've been looking at all the pictures ever since she came back to the Morata glue and she was always in pants, right? Now, I think, but we're using the American...
By pants, do you mean? Let's clarify.
Sorry, yeah. I mean, the superhero pants going over the catsuit, that would have been a different kind of Marvel look. But and she did say it was inspired by Black Panther, the Marvel Wakanda movie. I hope I pronounced that right.
We're going with it, Simon.
So anyway, the point is that I think that was why she's been wearing these leggings ever since she came back, and so it's actually a valid tennis issue.
But she also on the court pointed to its sort of the female empowerment element of it. She said, look, this catsuit, for anyone that hasn't seen, that's been locked in a cupboard for the past 24 hours, Serena Williams wore a Lycra black catsuit on court today. And she said, look, this is for new mums out there that are trying to do their thing among a million other things that are going on, and what could be more fierce than a catsuit? And my assessment of it was, I'm never going to wear a black Lycra catsuit. She's not inspired me to wear a black Lycra catsuit, but she did make me sort of feel vaguely empowered. And I think, great, good on you. You know, how could you not sort of marvel at the sight of someone just, you know, not giving two hoots about the fact that there'll be, you know, countless people out there saying, oh my goodness, you know, various insert disparaging comment about Serena's physique here, which, you know, we're certainly not going to be doing on this tennis podcast. On to the next very balanced outfit-related topic, which you have been tweeting about today, Simon.
Oh, right,
you cared just as much about Kyle's outfit, Kyle Edmund's outfit, who incidentally was victorious and very, very good today against Alex de Minaur out on court number 3. Talk me through the outfit, Simon.
Well, I quite liked it. It's got that kind of licorice all sorts stripe across the centre of the chest. Kyle also was asked about his outfit in press, so that there's more gender equality for you.
And hashtag equality.
And said that he'd been approached by some player who said he looked like he was playing for Sampdoria. I mean, my Italian football ain't that great that I can actually work out which part of the outfit that relates to. But it's the same basic shape that the Nike were using in Australia, wasn't it? But they had a sort of pink... Was it Australia? They had a
pink and black.
They had a pink colour scheme. And what's actually nice, I think, is they got this sort of... teal type blue that they're wearing here.
I was going to say teal. Yeah, I'm glad you agree. There's been a bit of discussion about the exact shade of blue, but I'm glad we're in agreement there.
Consult Farrow and Ball.
Oh, they'd have some really waffy name for it.
Yeah, they'd call it
aquamarine.
No, that wouldn't be wild enough for them. they call it a peacock's tail or something, wouldn't they?
I have no issue with the colour, just to insert my thoughts here. My issue was the matching socks. It's just sort of a bridge too far, do you know what I mean?
Too much. Well, I don't know. I thought you looked rather good, but the point about the colour is it looks good on the red clay. And it was a nice...
It photographs well, I suspect. And Carl was really good today, wasn't he? Well,
particularly, I was quite frustrated because I didn't get to write about Cameron Norrie yesterday because there were no photographers on the court.
Were there really not any? Maybe they were planning to go for latter sets, which didn't happen.
That's the whole point. They were sort of rotating between matches, and they were going to the women's matches first because they're always likely to be shorter. Then by the time they came to Norrie's match, I couldn't get on the court. Therefore, I had to readdress my piece, partly because we didn't have any decent photos of the fella.
You should have drawn a quick cartoon of him, submitted it to the desk.
Whereas Carl, as you say, was looking spankingly good. I mean, I think Alex de Minaur could, if he... gone through the draw and said, who do you want to play in the first round? Could he have picked a more perfect opponent, particularly as they actually trained together in the Bahamas?
Is a perfect opponent?
Yeah, because de Minaur is rhythm and power and predictability and, you know, excellent resilience, tenacity and retrievals, but he can't hurt Kyle.
But Kyle's kind of a lot of those things, but with the weapons and with the tenacity now and like the intensity he's got, he's relentless now. He doesn't have lapses in concentration. That for me is one of the most impressive things.
Yeah, it's a sort of haymaker after haymaker. He's a bit like Tyson in his heyday, isn't he? He's coming in and he's completely the first shot, wasn't it? The first point, I think the fourth shot of the rally on the first point, was this vicious backhand up the line. The one where he slightly fades it sort of from inside to out. And it was just like, right, this is going to be done in under 2 hours. As soon as he hit that shot, as Tyson always says, everyone has got a plan against me until they get punched in the face. And that was kind of that moment.
So I'm guessing Kyle is getting a lot of space in the paper tomorrow. Serena as well. Is there room for anything else?
Not really, no. No.
Not even Jack Sock?
No, we just went to see Jack Sock just to try and check out why he might have said to the umpire, I think he said to her, I'm the player, I can do whatever I want, you're only here because I'm here, or something like that.
On the face of it, Simon, that doesn't that doesn't sound great.
Yeah, and he was claiming that both he and his opponent, I mean, I know we didn't speak to Zop, so I wasn't able to confirm what Zop thought about it, but... he claimed that both he and Zop had felt that 6 to 8 line calls were incorrect and that she had a big impact on the direction of the match and that this was very frustrating. But I think you can tell from his attitude generally that he's just not respectful to people and seems to be biting him in the arse a bit, his attitude at the moment, and perhaps that's what he deserves.
Is it the case of one of these things where if you were being backed up with results, that kind of bit of attitude would be a lot more tolerable? No?
Totally not. I mean, some ways it'd be worse if you feel like...
I'm trying to cut the guy some slack here, Simon.
Slack for Sock. yeah, no, he's not... making many friends at the moment, I think, and not picking up many points either. I mean, I think he's outside the top 100 in the race this year.
And he's now removed from the little section of the draw that Denis Shapovalov is in, who made his French Open debut this morning. And it's another one that on paper looks pretty straightforward, but he was a breakdown in both of the first two sets. Really, he was 5-2 down in the first set and really had to fight through and continues to win fans the world over.
Yeah, I mean, his first match at Roland Garros, and I was actually watching that on TV, and it was interesting when you got to the third set and the audience were cheering quite strongly for Milman, And I felt they were cheering strongly for Milman because they loved watching Shapovalov so much. They wanted him to go to a fourth set. So it was a weird kind of backwards compliment, if you see what I mean.
What do you think of the fact that he was on Longlen? And, this might be conflating two separate scheduling controversies, but Muguruza Kuznetsova were over on court one simultaneously. On the third court, two former champions, the world number four, I think, Muguruza. What do you make of that?
Yeah, she's a real contender here. No, that was definitely underbilling for them, and it was a great match as well. I think Roland Garros haven't necessarily got their plans quite lined up this morning. Was it the first on or the second
one? Yeah, they were both first on. It sort of started off this morning and then ended up being well into the afternoon because we had a rain delay of around about an hour and a half, 2 hours in the middle of the day, although it's turned out to be absolutely glorious. As I say that, I've looked over into the distance, Simon, and it looks like Mordor over there. But anyway, we'll endeavour to get the podcast finished before Mordor encroaches on Roland Garros. Elsewhere, there have been, I don't think, too many upsets. I saw Caroline Garcia go through in absolutely bulldozing fashion over Yuan Duan of China. That was real statement tennis from her. Simona Halep didn't get played today because matches went so long on Philippe Chatrier. One of the matches that was inserted into the schedule was the resumption of Rafael Nadal against Simone Bolelli. It was only half a set's worth of tennis, but it didn't disappoint, did it?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't able to watch much of it because Carl was on at the same time, but I did catch some of Bolelli's drop shots, which were causing plenty of admiration and entertainment. Bolelli is a really great player to watch. He's clearly never been highly ranked. He's not necessarily put it together. Maybe he's not one of those guys who necessarily comes out on top when things get really tough, but he's got a lovely kind of slightly dilettantish approach to tennis, hasn't he?
And Grand Slam doubles champion.
Yep. So he's a kind of cavalier, and Rafa obviously came back and equalised, having gone in love three down in that third set, came back and equalised very quickly, and then they went to a tie break. I did watch that actually. The tie break was good, and Bolelli had a 6-3 up, and then Rafa did some classic Rafa reeling in and pulled out some crunching forehand winners and got it done in straight sets, didn't he?
What do you make of the fact that, so as I understand it, and I got this information from Mats Wilander, so I'm not going to question it for a moment. As I understand it, what happened yesterday was after the second set, which of course Rafa won to go two sets to love up, he was informed by the referee that they had about 10 to 15 minutes more worth of tennis to play, and he was offered the chance to either go off then or continue playing, and he elected to continue playing, and the fact that he went 3-love down in that third set, it ended up looking like a slightly poor decision. Mats's take on that is that he's not thinking that clearly. He's edgy, he's nervous, he's not quite in the right headspace yet. That's not to say that he won't get there over the course of the next six matches, but he wasn't fully convinced.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Kevin Anderson, a winner. John Isner, a winner. Two of those three sets of his tiebreak sets. Fabio Fognini, also a winner today. I know you think he is a potentially troublesome third-round opponent for Carl Edmund.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty comprehensive win over Andujar as well, 4-2-1. Fognini, well, anyone who saw him take Andy apart, Andy Murray, in Naples during the Davis Cup knows what a lethal clay court player he can be. So many options, such a loose arm, can hit shots you just don't see coming and disguise everything so well. So he has got the ability to maybe neutralise Edmund's power that very few people would have.
Kiki Bertens also in a 6-2-6-1 over Aryna Sabalenka. Watch this space for Kiki Bertens, because nobody talks about her, no one ever talks about her. She's the lesser spotted clay court specialist, but she was blooming good today. Angelique Kerber also a winner. Very, very quickly, Simon, the order of play tomorrow sees Cameron Norrie play on court Philippe Chatrier last on against Luca Puy. He really thinks he's got a good chance in that. Do you think he's right to?
Yeah, he's not dead and buried in that one by any means. I mean, he's full of confidence. He's awkward. He's got lots of spin on that lefty forehand, which it can be really difficult to deal with. His serve is growing great against, how do you say it, Gojovic. Oh,
I was saying Gojovic until Sunday, and then I got corrected by a German to Gojovic.
I created an acronym for myself so that I can remember how to spell it.
I've also been corrected on Fucsovics, which is Carl Edmund's next opponent. I had been saying Fucsovics, and it's Fucsovics.
Well, that's good to know.
Direct from the mouth of a Hungarian, Simon. You're welcome.
So he was serving big in that first round for the 41 minutes that it did last. Are we getting a bit carried away on Scandi evidence? Is that what your snigger suggests there?
Not at all. I just know. I just have a little feeling about Cameron Norrie against Luca Puy tomorrow.
Well, I mean, there's always that thing about French players on Chatrier as well. It's like certain football crowds that can turn on their players quickly if they're not attacking enough or showing enough gumption, you know. And that happens here regularly.
Heather Watson, just in quick Brit Watch update, takes on Elise Mertens. what? Any chance of an upset there? Look, regardless of what we all think, she's proved us all wrong, because she told us on the eve of the tournament, I feel really confident, I really believe I can, well, you know, at least win my first match here. Not many people gave her a chance. She did it.
It wasn't a great match, was it? Let's be fair.
No, but you know that she was playing an opponent that gave her no rhythm at all. No, absolutely. It's difficult. If it's either a winner or an unforced error, I'm doing my best, Simon.
She gave the backboard quite a lot of rhythm.
Okay, I think I'll take that as an answer for you on Heather Watson against Elise Mertens. Any other upsets tomorrow? Djokovic going to make it through? Halep, the usual suspects.
Yeah, at this point I'm running out of answers because I just haven't had time to really look at the schedule tomorrow.
Well, that's because the order of play only came out about 4 minutes ago, because they're not doing a particularly great job of being timely, shall we say, with the order of play. We'll leave it there, shall we, Simon? It's been an absolute pleasure. What's going to be in the Telegraph tomorrow? Edmund, Serena?
That's it. I mean, they're two big stories.
But there's a lot of space in the Telegraph over this fortnight, isn't there, for tennis? It's getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, I hope you noticed our 8-page French Open pullout on Saturday, which was full of some peerless content. And I think we've been... I can't claim to be outwriting my rivals, but I think I am outspacing them.
For more peerless content, do continue to check out the Telegraph throughout the French Open fortnight. We are brought to you in association with the Telegraph, with our three executive producers, Triple S, Melanie Bowes and TennisBalls.com, with La Manga Club, and also with our podcast mascot, Charlie the Ferret. We'll be back tomorrow. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.